Welcome to the Student of the Game Fire Podcast with your host, Danny B.
Today's guest is Matt Atkins, 14 years of combination experience, a backstep firefighter for South Adams County Fire Department in Colorado on Tower 24. Matt never had the thought of being a firefighter. Back at home on summer break, Matt saw a help needed sign at the local volunteer department and figured why not give it a shot. Upon entering the doors of the firehouse, he was introduced to how individuals coming into the fire service need to view the job, and the rest was history. It's so important when coming into this profession that we seek out the passionate into the job heavy hitters. Mentorship is key because it provides individuals with personalized guidance, support, and feedback from experienced professionals, helping them navigate challenges, develop new skills, achieve career goals, expand their networks, and grow both personally and professionally, ultimately leading to increased employee retention and a stronger organizational culture. With that, I present Matt Atkins.
Right on. So my name is Matt Atkins. Currently work for South Adams County Fire in Commerce City, Colorado, which is just outside of Denver. We border Denver to the north. I'm a backstep fireman on Tower 24. We cross staff a heavy rescue. And been in the fire service now since 2011. It's crazy how time flies. Just started out volunteering in my hometown. I'm a first generation firefighter. Came from a fairly, white collar upbringing. So this was all new to me when I joined and fell in love with it and just kind of hit the ground running. Been career since 2015. So I was really the only grown up adult career that I've ever known. And I couldn't see myself doing anything else really. So.
Okay. With that being said, can you talk about however the path led you to the fire service?
Absolutely. Yeah. I went to college initially because that's sort of what I was just expected to do. There was never any conversation of alternative plans. And in the community I grew up in too, that was what all my peers were doing as well. So it was just kind of made sense. And I went and I wasn't really passionate about anything there. I've always had sort of a short attention span when it comes to stuff that I don't care about. And so, did the typical college thing, probably partied a little too hard, didn't study hard enough. And I was home on summer break one year and my local volunteer fire department, small kind of suburban fire department outside of Allentown, Pennsylvania. They had a sign up and they're like, volunteers, welcome, no training needed. I always thought you needed a college degree or something to be a firefighter. I didn't know. So I popped in and said, hey, I'm kind of bored. This looks cool. What do I do? I remember filling out the application was a little note card. And it was just it was just name, address, phone number. I think I did a little background check sheet. And that was it. I think I had gear the next week. And they gave me a crash course in a Scott pack. And they were like, try to keep up. Don't get lost. And that was kind of my introduction to the fire service. And, I was really young and eager, but I didn't have a ton of mentorship at the time. And so with that, I just didn't really know kind of where to direct all my energy to. And a buddy of mine had suggested that I look into a live-in program with a resident program. I'd never even heard of that, didn't know anything about it. So I started looking places up an hour, 2 hours from where I lived, and settled on a place in Lancaster County. And got in there, and that's where my career just kind of took off, because it was a pretty new combination department. They had been all volunteer for a long time, and I got in the door right as they were transitioning from volunteer to combination. So they had hired a bunch of part-time people. All these part-time guys were on the job full-time, primarily around the Baltimore, D.C. metro. So a lot of Montgomery County guys, Anne Arundel guys, some Annapolis dudes, PG, Baltimore County, everyone was pretty well represented, kind of sort of up the 95 corridor in the beltway there. And so right out the gate, it's funny because I came in, I just gotten my fire one, which at my last place was sort of going above and beyond. And I got my EMT and thought I knew something. And then I got in the door there and they were like, wow, congrats. You've met the bare minimum requirements to be here. And I ate a little bit of humble pie early on, but Dude, I tell you what, the opportunity to, and it's just the opportunity to get to learn from guys who have been doing this job in busy urban and metropolitan departments for a long time, was an experience that I wouldn't trade for the world. And we ran an engine and a truck, a tiller. The tiller was sort of set up as a, it was like a sort of a heavy rescue tiller. So it was like right out the gate, you know, you did your engine book, got off probation, then you could start your truck book. And the truck book had a lot of, you know, rope rescue stuff on it, you know, because they expected proficiency. The rope stuff, you know, a lot of the guys that helped write the truck book there were Montgomery County guys, and I know their truck sign off is pretty rope rescue intensive as well. So it was just, it was an awesome experience, and also I learned how to play the game to get on the job and get hired. So I started carpet bombing the East Coast, testing up and down. You know, got a lot of thanks but no thanks letters, as everyone typically does. When they're just starting out. And I tested for DC, and then the very next day I drove down to this small city right on the Carolina border, Danville, Virginia. Small, like, I don't know, 50,000 person city, seven station department. Tested down there. That was the hardest written test I'd ever taken up until that point. I'd taken Fairfax's, DC's, Arlington's. And anyway, they called me back first, and so I went and I worked there for 5 years. Worked on a really busy engine company. It was like a basically a squad company, so it's a tech rescue engine company in a pretty economically impoverished city, really old city. You know, a lot of turn of the century construction, and it was an old department, not just in, you know, how long the department had been around, but you know, when I came in the door as a, you know, snot nosed 21-year-old firefighter, maybe 21, 22, something like that. I mean, there were 30-year backsteppers, you know what I mean? So just to come in the door and get to be mentored by these guys who'd been, you know, fighting fire and balloon frame and plastering lath for the last 30 years, just riding backwards, was just a tremendous experience as well. It was sort of like a second coming of age, in terms of firemanship. And the way it worked out really well, is because when I went to Manheim Township in Lancaster, it was a pretty busy company. We fought a fair bit of fire, but it wasn't like, you know, a poor southern city like Danville was. So I think there I kind of learned how to temper myself as a fireman, and sort of learned some cool like gee whiz tricks from some of those guys. And then I was able to take that little bit of experience and then apply it to just a pretty, you know, just an old fire ground, pretty decent fire duty. And it was cool. I just got to learn how to be a ghetto fireman, and I wouldn't trade that experience either, just for the world. So in 2020, my wife and I decided it's time for a change. So we packed up everything that we owned, and we just moved to we moved to Colorado. She got a really good job opportunity out here, so it was actually, it was, you know, she sort of led the charge in that respect. I just quit my job and moved out here and didn't have a job. And I was like, I think I ate a little bit of humble pie there too, because at that point I'd taught a few classes around the country and published a few articles, and I kind of thought, apsh, I'll get hired somewhere. And it took me a solid probably 6 to 8 months to get back on the job. Just I was in the middle of COVID, no one was really hiring, super competitive out here. And fortunately, you know, some of the other hopefuls fell through, and it just worked out that I got hired at South Adams. And what I really, and we can get into this a little later, but South Adams is from what I've noticed now, being out here for almost 5 years, is the Colorado Fire Service is a little different from the East Coast and the Mid-Atlantic where I grew up. It's just different. And this place feels very familiar. It's a young department, and the guys are go-getters, and we fight fire, and so that's kind of dictated our culture. And it feels almost like when I step into a firehouse in South Adams, I'm stepping into a firehouse, you know, kind of back on the East Coast where I grew up. And so I kind of lucked into this place, got hired as a lateral, and it's just been great ever since. So that's the story to my sort of my journey.
Okay. Girl, I'm going to back up a little bit. You mentioned Manheim Township. That is the town, that is the department that has the blue and white Pierce trucks, right?
Yes, it was yellow when I was there.
It was yellow. Yes.
Yeah, so a little backstory to that. So that when I got there, the engines were still blue and white. The way it was explained to me was, there was three departments, or three volunteer departments that merged together and formed Manheim Township, and they wanted to pick a neutral color. So Eden, which is where I was at, we had the yellow and blue tailor truck.
That's right.
And then Southern Manheim, I think they had like a, they were white. And so basically they picked a neutral color. So they picked the high school colors. That's where they came up with the blue and white. But I'm proud to say that I was there when that tailor was still yellow. So, but yeah, dude, it's cool. Because they kept it and they refurbed it. Now they have a new one too. So they're pretty sharp.
Yeah.
They're pretty sharp. So,
yeah.
Colorado's starting to buy some tillers. I don't know what their beef has been with tillers and mid-mounts all these years, but they're starting to catch on. So maybe we'll get one at work one day.
All right. I had to throw that out there because, you know, I am a fire nerd. So you mentioned Manheim Township, and I was like, I know exactly what he's
truck
talking 204, about.
204, man. I still have my truck patch, man. That was one of the coolest things I've ever earned.
Awesome. All right. So so you got hired with Danville, right? And you were there for 5 years. Then all of a sudden, hey, the wife's got an awesome opportunity. You just, dude. So my question is, was that a hard decision or was it like easy?
It was hard. It was hard, man. I don't know. It was hard. It was hard and easy for two different reasons. So it was easy for, the family thing. She wasn't, you know, maybe she wasn't connecting so much with, some of her peers there. She's from kind of New England area, and so just not a lot in common with some of the people down there. She had good friends, but I think at work she wasn't feeling super stimulated. And so we had the conversation of, well, yeah, hey, like, look around. Tell me where you're going to be happy. And, she knew that I liked it out here. I'd been coming out here to climb for a little while anyway. You know, it's not like it was totally, you know, off
random. Right.
Yeah. But she's the one that got the job out here. And so, yeah, I had to quit my job, not knowing what the future is going to look like. And but it was cool because it added, like any big jump like that, it leads to personal growth. And when I came out, I got hooked up through like a mutual friend of the fire service. It's crazy how we network, right? A mutual friend of the fire service saw I moved out here and I was looking for a job and hooked me up with a wildland season gig. So I previously worked part-time for Virginia Department of Forestry, mostly doing like prescribed burns and stuff. So I had a little bit of wildland experience, not much. I came out here and I worked one wildland season on the front range. And it was like one of our bigger fire scenes that we had. So got on a couple of like the pretty big wildfires that were sort of threatening some of the front range communities out here. So that was pretty trippy. And then I worked on an ambulance in the city of Aurora for a little while, which is, if you're not familiar with the city of Aurora, it's a super busy 911 system, and working on a bus there and just, gunshots and stabbings every time I went into work. And I'm not like a huge EMS nerd, but it is, we're in this job to save lives, and it's part of what we do. And so I think that just like the fast pace of that system made me a better provider in general. That was kind of an interesting place to work because I worked for a private EMS company who didn't have a great relationship with the fire department at the time. And that was really weird being on the outside looking in, because I had actually just taught at Carolina Firemanship Days, and there was some Aurora people there. And I was like looking up to them, man, these guys are studs, and they are studs. It was like an interesting juxtaposition of worlds. But what it taught me is that, we have private EMS quartered with us at work now because we don't transport. And I just remember being like, they are, even though like they don't do the same job we do, like they're our family, and I'm going to treat them like that. You know what I mean? Because there were, maybe some crews that I didn't feel like we were really treated that way. And so even that was an area of personal growth, because it gave me a chance to sit on the other side of the tracks, if you will, and be like, okay, hey, like, these are still our brothers and sisters. Like we're still doing this job together, whether they wear, a fire department shirt or a private EMS shirt. So it was kind of a cool experience. It was a cool experience. So,
okay. All right. So, can you tell us a little bit about South Adams County? I know briefly, I'm pretty sure I watched a year in review video not too long ago, and it looks like y'all burn a shit ton over there.
Yeah, dude. Well, you got to see our. So we just had our award ceremony this past tour while I was at work, and they unveiled our 2024 video, and it's dope. I tell you what, man. I don't wear a GoPro because most you saw how hard it was for me to just get on Zoom. I'm not very tech savvy, and one thing I don't like is I don't me personally I don't like going to a fire and trying to play with technology. Like I'm trying to I'm an outside vent firefighter on the truck, and so I'm trying like I like to think about the job I'm going to do when we get there. But that being said, this past year, 2024, God, I wish I wore a GoPro, man, because we would have had so much. Even Chase, who does the videos, he's like, dude, like the guys would text me after a fire. They'd be like, please tell me you were wearing a camera. I was like, no, man, I wish I was though. It was good. But yeah, you know, I think we're fortunate. We see a pretty decent volume of fire, I would say, especially for our size. So we are a six station department. We cover about 70 square miles, about 100 personnel, give or take. It's four engine companies and two trucks. We have a truck down south, the tower, that's what I'm on, and then a truck up north. And then the truck that I'm on, like I said, we cross staff the heavy rescue, and then there's a hazmat engine company. They cross staff a hazmat rig as well. So we have all those capabilities. We're part of like the North Area Regional Tech Rescue Team, which is like a Type 2 heavy rescue team. And you know, I'm not sure I right off the hip our exact call volume. I couldn't tell you. It's probably as an agency, I want to say I think it was like 11,000 something this year. We don't transport, so but we do run. We don't priority dispatch, so we run pretty much we roll an engine or a truck on pretty much every medical. So, you know, I'm not gonna pretend like, you know, all of our call volume is fires, but compared to some of our neighbors, I think proportionately we definitely see a higher volume of fire, it feels like. So yeah, it's an awesome place to work.
And what's your minimum staffing like across your apparatus?
So it's right now, minimum three on the engines, and it's actually in our CBA, four on the trucks. But I also know that that's battalion chief discretion, and our battalions usually won't mando guys to fill that fourth role. They'll put it out for overtime, and guys are usually pretty good about picking it up. So I want to say like 99% of the time we have four on the truck, which is great because that impacts how we operate because we do a split truck kind of concept. And so when we have four on the truck, we are infinitely more effective on the fire ground. So, but yeah, they won't typically mando for it. And we'll have four on the engine. Like right now we're kind of heavy. It's the beginning of the year, you know, no one's really on vacation and you know how it goes, right? Once the summer hits and then it's hunting season and then it's the holidays and then everyone's running a little light. But we just hired six more laterals, and I think we're going to do a pretty big entry level academy coming up. So I'd imagine we'll be back to four on everything here before too long. So,
And you mentioned four engines, two trucks. What's your first alarm assignment consist of when it comes to a first due structure in South Adams area?
three engines, a truck, a battalion, and now we just this year we put a SAT officer in place, which is a safety and training, and then we get an ambulance as well. So.
And I had a question. Oh yeah. For those that you probably perked some people's ears with this. What does your lateral entry consist of?
So it's been sort of, I think we're still trying to dial in exactly what the process looks like. We had hired like laterals before I came, but it was like on a one by one basis sort of deal. When I came, we were the first like official lateral academy, and that was sort of interesting because I don't think they really knew what to like do with us. We had a great academy. Again, I talk about just an exercise in humility. I thought I was pretty good at this job, and then I got in there. Just their standards and expectations here are high. I told the guys out at work the other day, and they're like, "Really? I don't think they're that high." I was like, "Dude, you haven't worked somewhere else, man. I'm telling you what, like our worst guy would be a stud at some, you know, some of these departments." And so that, you know, right out the gate, you know, I'd never touched a 28-foot ladder before. We just didn't have them in my last department. So like right out the gate, we're, you know, banging 28-foot ladders, and just I think that was like literally day one. They're like. I was an MSA guy for a long time, and so we were doing a confidence maze in a Scott pack like the first within like the first like 12 hours of being in the academy or something like that. It was 0 to 100, but it was good. Sort of ripped the band-aid off and got me off the couch and back into shape. So since then, our process has, I think, become maybe a little more sort of structured. I had the opportunity to sit in on a lateral hiring panel, not this past hire, but the one before that. And so what I liked about that was HR sort of took a step back and they really let us kind of define what the lateral process was going to look like. They let us write the interview questions. I thought some of our interview questions, your lateral interview questions are not the same as entry level interview questions, right? Entry level interview questions, we want to see, if they can communicate, if they, have certain degrees of just aptitude and interpersonal skills and et cetera. But with laterals, I'm more interested in their story. Where did they come from? What do they do? Why do they want to be here? So I even tossed out and said, hey, for one of our interview questions, let's just put a pro bar on the table and just be like, you have 3 minutes. Tell me what you know about this. And it was cool because some dudes nerded out over the physics and some dudes knew everything about the history of it. And some people didn't know anything about it. And then it was an easy decision. So but we've also made the lateral academy longer. I think mine was 3 weeks and now it's six. So we just made it a little bit longer. But they're going pretty in depth now. Our lateral academies are sort of like, hey, look, you did the textbook stuff, you met the JPRs when you did your first big fire academy. So we're here to teach you kind of our way, the street way. And so it's real searches and it's reality. It's stretching hose bundles over, fence gates and cars parked in the driveway and junk on the front lawn and a realistic dynamic fire ground that, that's, we want them to be able to come out of the academy and hit the ground running. 'Cause that's the expectation. They come in at a higher grade, a higher pay grade. And when they come in as a lateral, they do a few tours riding as a fourth. And then they're probably going to be the sole backstepper on an engine before too long. And so we want them to not need their handheld. So that's sort of what our process looks like.
I like that because, well, number one, I like that you mentioned coming there. South Adams has like a standard and expectations, and to me, those words, it's very easy to say those words, standards and expectations, but it's not easy until you have a department that's going to put foot to ass, meaning like, hey, oh, you want standards and expectations? This is what it's going to be. You know what I mean? Like, that's just, to me, it's like, as firemen, like I want the department I work for to have that, but it's very hard to say, hey, I want this, and then if the department goes, okay, you want it, here it is, and then it's like, whoa, wait, like, hey, let's pump back. It's like, no, that's what we need to have. So it's great that you mentioned that you left everything that you had back home. You packed up, you left, but you found an organization that met what you
Oh
wanted,
yeah,
your standard.
absolutely, for sure. And I think it's important too. Like that doesn't stop after the academy. We do. We have annual. They're called minimum company standards evaluations. And we have a whole list of skills. We have truck specific skills for the truck companies, engine specific skills for the engine companies. But if you're on an engine, you have to draw a truck skill, and if you're on a truck, you have to draw an engine skill. So they still want us to be able to function in that capacity as we should. We're a small department, and so we don't, I think you and I have kind of chatted about sort of the kind of like the Quint debate, and I don't want to say a dirty word on your show, Quint, but also that's kind of the reality. And so as much as we want to just thump our chest and say, well, we're a truck, and we are 90% of the time, we still need to be able to keep those skills sharp, if for nothing else, because we could pick up overtime or get roved out to an engine. And showing up and being like, well, I'm on the truck, I can't pull a line. Like, that's not an acceptable excuse. So we do these minimum company standards, and I mean, it's a real deal. It's for the truck, it's dumping the entire ladder bed and getting, the aerial or the bucket to a window. And then it's a vertical vent evaluation and it's a VES evaluation. It's the things that we do. And it's with a stopwatch and a training officer watching it. And it's not just like, wow, you failed, go home. Not that we fail. We typically knock it out of the park. That's just like a company pride thing. But we get feedback on it. Hey, I noticed you guys did this. Maybe you could clean up something here, or you guys looked really jam up doing this. So kudos and you know, and that's great. So I think it's really cool that we have that, because that's not, we did a physical fitness test back in Danville, but we never did like company standards or anything like that. And it keeps crews dialed in. So
I'm in agreement with you. Like having those yearly physical tests, like my department does that. And so our training chief wants people to see, okay, this is where you're at. So he wants the individuals to be like, all right, I did this time last year, this year, like, let's see if you can get another round, or, you know, this year, let's see if you can go a little bit longer as far as time consumption on your air. But one of the things that you mentioned to me that like it should hit hard for people or should hit home is, all right, your ladder skills that you have with South Adams. All right. Hey, we want to see how fast you could dump the bed and get the aerial up to a certain target. All right. If you don't meet it, it's not like you fail, but if you're not, if the feedback from the training chief or officer, whoever's in charge, is, hey, y'all can step it up, or you need to be a little bit better here, that's where the individual needs to eat a little bit of that pie that you mentioned and
that's
go,
right.
He's right or she's right, and not just go, well, you know, we did this right, how come we're not being told? It's
sure.
Like firemen, for some reason, sometimes want their hand held. And it's like, okay, no, that's not acceptable. The acceptable goal is, this is how we need to perform regardless of your years of service. Like,
absolutely.
The citizens expect that.
Absolutely. 100%. Absolutely. And, you know, we do the physical fit. We do several physical fitness tests a year. You know, we do a fire sled physical fitness test, which is, you know, sort of like a CPAC kind of deal. We do a peer fitness evaluation. So we have peer fitness trainers. So guys from our department that are all certified personal trainers, they're a resource that we can use. They'll write workout plans for you and diet plans and stuff for you. But they also do a peer fitness assessment. So that we have a MET test, push-up tests, crunches, you know, body fat index, like all of that jazz. So we do those as well as like a measure of fitness. But then also, like, you know, let's be real here. You know, you could maybe do 500 push-ups, but that doesn't necessarily mean that you're efficient with throwing on an air pack and throwing ladders. Or maybe, you know, maybe you're a PT stud, but you can't vent a roof to save your life. And so this is a good chance to see your strengths and weaknesses in both realms of that, because that's really important. You know, like, you can be really good at fitness, but if you're not good at doing your job, you're just really fit and not good at doing your job.
Exactly.
Or if you're really good at doing your job, but you're not in shape, then, you know, then you're a liability to yourself and your crew. So, and the citizens. So this is good, because we kind of get to see it from both angles. And like you said, kind of, it's a little introspective. And sometimes you do have to look in the mirror and be like, man, you know, I got to work on this. And that's good, because it ultimately gives us a longer career, and it improves the service that we give to the people that count on us. I mean, it's kind of hard to argue against that.
Exactly. All right. So you mentioned a topic I definitely want to hit on with you, and I want others to listen to it.
Sure.
The quint concept. Okay.
Yeah.
So I'm going to go first real quick on my whole thing with the quint concept.
Fire away.
Not every area is capable of having a dedicated truck. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Not every area is going to spec out a ladder truck where it doesn't have a pump on it.
Mm-hmm.
Like you mentioned earlier, it's my belief that jurisdictions have quints because the personnel on that apparatus, they have to play dual roles. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Like, for instance, my station, we are a single piece house.
Mm-hmm.
Well, actually, I'll take that back. We're a double piece house. We have a brush truck that we also
okay.
have too, but we have a quint, we have a first due area. Okay. So we can get dispatched to a vehicle fire, and it's like, okay, we're going to have to be able to know how to stretch our line and put the fire out. Of course, officer's discretion, we can always from the get-go ask for the next closest engine to come help respond with additional water, because where we're at, it's very rural. There's only like one hydrant. After that hydrant, once you turn right, going past the station, that's
wow.
it.
Wow.
That's all we
oh.
got. So we're in a little bit of a predicament there.
Yeah.
But, you know, you hear people going, well, Quincher, that's dumb. I don't know why people design it. And it's like, we don't know the needs of that department. So why are we so quick to get on social media and get our little fingers typing away when we don't know that department situation?
No, I feel you. And that's, you said it pretty perfectly. And I appreciate that you view it through the lens of not knowing what their department's needs are. Because ultimately, it's, you know, the department's needs should mirror the community's needs. And you're right. You know, I would love to work in, you know, Boston and just ride a true truck, or San Fran something, you know, but that's just not the reality that we have. For us, we do the same thing. So I have a first due on the tower. Now, granted, you know, we only have 280 gallons of water on the tower. So, and then the same with the truck up north, our straight stick up north, they have a first due. And they, you know, we're pretty tucked in and surrounded by mutual aid. Whether it's mutual aid coming from Denver or Adams County, which are our neighbors, or, you know, our own first due. We have two engine companies kind of stacked right on top of each other down south in what we call the core. So for us on the tower, it's less likely that we're going to be in a position where we, you know, we're going to be there for an extended period of time. But, you know, Truck 28, in kind of the area that they're in, it's more suburban, newer communities. So there's these big sprawling new build communities. The engines are spaced out a little more. And so they're running mutual aid now with City of Aurora 16s. And so they at least have a truck and an engine coming from Aurora. So that's, and you know, they're only probably like 6 minutes down the road or something like that. So it's not like they're, you know, gunslinging by themselves for too long necessarily, but it's more of a possibility there. And so, you have to train on it to a degree. And now this is sort of my soapbox. So if you need to like throw up the time card or something.
Nope, go ahead. Roll with it.
But my issue with the Quint concept is I think it creates sort of the ideology that it creates ends up negatively impacting the fire ground. And mm-hmm. Hear me out on that. So it's kind of like that, like the jack of all trades thing. I hate that. I hate it so much because, you know, when you're a jack of all trades, that just tells me that you do a lot of things, but not that well. You know what I mean? And so I'd rather have a fire ground of aces. Like, show me two engine companies that are jam up engine companies that they know every stretch in their first due, and they eat, sleep, and breathe engine work. And then a truck company that eat, sleeps, and breathes truck work. And now all of a sudden you have a bunch of aces instead of just a bunch of people that are trying to manage EMS and engine work and truck work and rescue. All of our engines have hydraulic pools on them. And so like all of our engines are basically like a light rescue company in a way. And so like, so that's another discipline those guys have to be dialed into. So it's hard. It's a big ask for guys to really be that proficient in every single discipline of the fire service. So I think a fair compromise that we've found is, you know, if we do 80% of our training focused on truck work and 20% of it still focused on engine work, we at least have a pretty foundational level of knowledge for those few circumstances when we might have to behave as an engine. We are sort of operating on a hybrid predetermined assignment model. We're hoping to go sort of full PDA. There's a lot of logistics, some bureaucracy involved with our mutual aid partners, because we have regional SOGs, and so there's a little bit of kind of stuff there that needs to get worked out. But within our own city, when we're playing in our own sandbox, we have a playbook for our first two engines and our truck. And so as the truck, when we train on that playbook, that's what we expect to do at a fire. Now, operating as a Quint, that would be like a page, that'd be like an audible. We still have audible plays, but it's just not going to be what we're going to go to. And something that we've discussed as a Quint that works, I think, pretty well is if we show up, especially knowing we have a well hydrated district, and we know that if we leave our station and we turn left, I mean, honestly, really, if we turn right or left, it really doesn't matter. But especially if we turn left, we have two engines showing up in pretty close proximity if they're not beating us there. But, you know, in the, you know, extraneous circumstance where we do end up kind of on our own first, or we're in a situation where the most appropriate thing is immediate water application, because I'm not going to pretend like that's not the case. We run a lot of outside in fires, and, you know, an outside in fire I might be more inclined to put the fire out so it doesn't make the eaves and burn the, you know, get in the attic space and burn the roof off of the house while we're, you know, trying to knock out a search in decent conditions anyway, because it's an outside in fire. So there are probably times when it's appropriate, but what we've figured out is, look, if we have to show up and operate as a quint, we still spot as a truck. We still spot with our ladder bed in mind. We're a pretty ground ladder driven department. So like on residentials, we don't even put our jacks out on the truck typically. And if it's under two stories, that's, I'm speaking for my own company. What mm-hmm. Truck 28 does on the north side, that's kind of, you know, that's their own jam. But we know that, you know, we work off of ground ladders, whether we go to the roof or whatever. So, so we'll spot though as a truck. So if we need to use the truck as a truck, then we will. And if we pull a line, we kind of think of it as a 280-gallon water can. So no, that next engine, they're still going to lay in. They're still going to pull their own line. That second new engine is still going to get their water supply. Like, that engine is still expected to show up and be an engine. No one's giving a water supply to us because – so my driver and I are outside vent partners. I don't need him married to the pump panel because now I'm – it doubles the amount of work I have to do. And if I have to dive into a window, now I'm – yelling, hey, someone else come help me with this, right? Or same with going to the roof. So I don't want him married to a pump panel. So if we have to operate as a quint, like I said, spot as a truck, pull a line. Our inside crew is still going to go interior. They're still going to search with the can. They're going to do what they do. And then Chris and I, as the outside vent guys, we can dump 280 gallons of water as basically a big water can, drop the line in the front yard, and go back to doing outside vent work. Go back to doing truck work. When that engine comes, they can do engine stuff. That's a system that seems to work really well. We, you know, borrowed that playbook from a couple other departments, especially with basement fires. Man, if I can knock out a basement window and dump 280 gallons of water in that basement to protect our truck crew searching above it with a can, by the time I do that, drop the line, go back to pulling window bars or whatever I'm doing is outside vent, and the second new engine shows up, and then they make the basement push. And hopefully it's a little more tenable for them too to make those stairs. So that's sort of the compromise that we found. Because yeah, you're right. At the end of the day, it's pretty hard to justify to a taxpayer why you let their house, you know, why you let the roof burn off of their house because of pride of being a quote truck when you have 300 gallons of water on your truck. Like, that's not lost on me. As much as I wish that I could just be a truck every single time I go to work, I think it takes a level of responsibility to our taxpayers to be like, okay, well, they bought that $1 million, freaking $10 million ladder truck, and there's water on it. And so there are probably times when it's appropriate to use that water.
Absolutely.
Is the way I look at it. So,
no, dude, I love your stance on it. And I wholeheartedly couldn't agree with you more. The whole jack of all trade thing. Okay. I'm sure there are some individuals out there who are really good.
Oh, for sure.
At whatever the case may be, but it's been my experience that trying to be a jack of all trades, there's going to be something that suffers because you're
exactly.
not hitting those benchmarks of that mm-hmm. objective every
Absolutely.
Day. And, you know, fire departments across the country are being dealt with the situation of, hey, yes, we'll do it. Yes, we'll do that. Yes, we'll do that. And I think chiefs need to understand, like, there's a limit. I get it. Under the watch of your command for your department, you want to say we do this, that, and the other. But how about, why not look at the bigger picture and go, okay, there's a very close mutual aid department that does this very well. Let's use them in case of, like, let's just say hazmat, for example. Let's use them primary for anything hazmat related, but let our guys and gals be good at what I call bread and butter. Because here's the most important thing. Every single fire truck I see, the letters FIRE are first. It's never rope rescue fire department. You know what I mean? Or dive specialist fire department. It's fire, you know, some places are using fire rescue, fire services, fire division, sure. whatever the case, but the key word is fire. And so I feel like when we lack that, because that's where the citizens are going to thank you. If you can't stretch a line without botching it, or, you know, put a fire out without making it worse, like, what are we doing? And to me, it all depends. Low frequency, high frequency calls. Like, I understand the people should be good at rope rescue, things like that, but To me, it's all about what's on the side of the truck. For me personally, I try to stay good and relevant at fire and EMS task because that's what I'm used to.
Yeah, and it's what you do, right? I mean, you ultimately have to you have to check yourself a little and be like, what do I do? And with us at work, we primarily run EMS, but we go to fires, and so we have to be good at those things. And you're right. And if you're on, you know, if you're on a hazmat team or you're on a tech rescue team, you have to train on that stuff too. And I would maybe argue that we, as a just maybe as an industry, we don't train on that stuff enough because, like, at the end of the day, that's that very low frequency, very high risk kind of situation. But yeah, the fire foundations, they have to be there. They have to, or else you're lying to the public. You know, and
Exactly.
these people who say, well, 99% of what we do is EMS, so why do we train on fire? Well, you train on fire because the one fire you go to a year, you look like you can't pull a line. And what that means is that the person who was like, my house is burning down, I'm gonna call the fire department, they're gonna fix it. They don't want EMS people showing up. They want firefighters showing up. So be like, you have to be a firefighter if you're going to do this job, whether 90% of what you do is EMS or not. You know, I've never been caught in a flashover taking a blood pressure. So I should probably be pretty good at doing fire stuff too, you know? But I digress. I don't know.
No,
I
man,
agree. I hear you, man.
I love it. I love it. I mean, I think like not all places are FDNY, Chicago, you know, places that have true truck companies that do true truck work. Like, I get it. They can afford to have trucks without pumps. They can afford to, hey, when we arrive on scene, leave room for the truck. We're going to the roof. We're doing outside vent. We're doing search. But you have areas in this country that's just not feasible. So I never understood the notion of why people make fun of, or, oh my God, they used a Q word. Does that truck have hose on it? Like, I never understood why we do that to each other.
Yeah, I mean, it's the fire service, right? We're always going to find the thread to pick at, and it's one thing one day and one thing the next. And I've drank the Kool-Aid from both buckets, you know, because when I was at Eden, you know, that was a true truck, and those dudes all came from departments that run true trucks. And you know, if you had a quint, you were, you know, a silly goose. You know, it was like you're like, ew, a quint. Oh, that's gross. But now, you know, I think it would be irresponsible for us to not at least acknowledge it. At the end of the day, that's what we ride. Now, that being said, we still set it up to prioritize our operations as a truck. So, you know, we had 2.5 crosslays on the tower. It's a 280-gallon water can or 280-gallon tank. What's the point of a 2.5? And so we got rid of those. And actually, we borrowed this from Salisbury, North Carolina. We got rid of those crosslays and we cut down 2 7-foot VES ladders for like our split levels and our garden apartments. We threw those in the crosslays. And like we still have 2 inch and 3/4 crosslays and a bumper line, but we don't need the full, you know, hose complement that mentioned. Like we have enough to do preliminary engine work, but yeah, we don't have a 300-foot inch and 3/4, and we don't have a 300-foot 2.5 off the back, and you know, and all the additional lines. Because that's engine work, right? We have the capabilities, but we are set up for jam up truck work.
All right. And that's funny you mentioned Salisbury, man. That's actually like 30 minutes from where I work.
Oh, right on.
So
Yeah, I know a few of those
and
cats,
those
so
boys see they see a
yeah,
lot
they
of
do.
work. See
They
a lot of
do for
work,
sure.
and a lot of them are jam up. So that's a shout
Yeah.
out to Salisbury for that. That's awesome that a department, a little known department like that, helps a department across the
Yeah.
other side of the country, man. That's
Well,
just
Nick, we brought Nick out. Nick came out and did a whole thing, and we were all looking at the slide deck going, oh, I want that. So I think like within a week, we were like, can we get rid of that 2.5? We don't use it. And they're like, yeah, sure. What are you going to do with the space? Ladders, man. And I was like,
That's awesome.
yeah, it was great.
It's awesome. Okay. Like for our truck, we don't have a front bumper because the way the truck was spec'd, the bumper is just, it's literally just a bumper. And all we have is two cross lays. We have one that's 200 foot inch to 3/4. And then we talked our chiefs into, and we showed them the need that we have certain homes in a automatic aid first do that we also respond with. where the home is a little bit set off the road more. So we got them to let us get a 300-foot
A
inch and three
300.
quarter. And but what we could do, we can break it off at 100, 200, or 300. So, you
Sure.
know, that helps. And then we have our high rise kit or packs, I should say,
Sure.
that you know, we can use it if need be. But like, so we have what we have for the time being to do what we got to do. And then when an engine comes, you know, we'll divvy out that you know, work as needed. But okay.
Sure. Yep.
I want to hit on the which is how we met. I want to hit on this blue car topic. It's
Yeah.
I know some people are like, oh my God, you just said like the quint word. Oh, it's terrible.
Yeah.
So I'll say from my perspective, my knowledge on it, you know, my department currently uses blue car. Okay.
Okay.
So there are pros and cons. To me, I'm not an officer. I always like to state that. And
Sure.
I
Same.
wanted, even if he didn't listen to, I still want to use my words correctly. Okay. Because my training chief listens to my podcast. So I will say, blue car to me, the terminology, okay, cool. It gets everyone on the same page as far as terminology or whatnot. Where I see some deficiencies is I've never been through, but I've watched officers go through their con ed on it. And so to me, it's like the same repetitive script.
It
It's
is.
the script, the script, the script. And to
Yep.
me, what for my opinion only, certain for certain individuals, that's going to like create a training scar where it's always you have to say this. There's no deviation, there's no room for interpretation, but there really is. But for certain officers we have, they're going to go, this is what I learned. I can't deviate off script because this is what Blue Car told me.
Right. Yeah, so I think this conversation will be more valuable to listeners because you come from a department that uses it, so you can like understand what we're talking about, right? Because I came from the East Coast where blue card, all I knew about blue card was some of the training pages I followed dunked on blue card pretty hard. And so I came out here already with like a preconceived notion of blue card, but it's what my department used, so naturally, I wanted to give it a fair shake. And what I've settled on, and this might not be popular for me to say, but what I've settled on is I don't like it. And I have reasons for that. I think at its core, there is some value to it. But I've also heard there's two things that I hear all the time that people say to defend blue card. They say, well, it's a communications model, not a tactics model. We'll get into that. And they say, well, it cleans up communications. And we'll get into that. But we'll start with I think the good of it, and you nailed it, and it creates a common language. And that's important, right? A common language is important because if I go to a neighboring agency and I give a size up and I call something a 1.5 story, or I call it, or similarly, I call it a Cape Cod, and that's not language in their vocabulary, that next due company or that I see on their way, they might not know what I mean by that, right? Like when I hear a 1.5 story, I mean, I'm thinking occupied attic space, we're gonna have knee wall issues. Like it changes my tactical approach to the fire, but if you don't have a common language, what you're saying is just bluff. So I do appreciate the fact that there is a common language. And I've taken the full blue card class. It was a requirement at my department when I came. We've since started to move away from it a little bit, but our neighbors still rely on it very heavily, as both, and from it, just my observation, as both a communication slash command and a tactics model. So I guess to segue into some of the kind of issues that I've noticed with it is the first one is they say it cleans up communication. And we already touched on, yeah, it does in a way because it creates a common language. It standardizes the size up, which I like. I do like the follow-up report, because I'm listening for that, especially as the truck's showing up and I'm at riding outside vent. I'm listening to that 360 follow-up, man, because there's a lot that is going to dictate is it a walkout at the back? Are there fences? What side of the house are the stairs on, or something like that? Like the steps going down to the back, if it's landscaped, like that's going to change how I get off the rig and the ladder package I bring, the tool complement I bring, et cetera. So I'm paying attention to that. So I really like that. But it's long-winded, you know, and the issue is you get into task saturation. Again, like you said, I'm just a backstep fireman, but it's an unrealistic expectation for a company officer, especially when we're running, you know, if we are running a three-person engine, that's a working, they have to be a working company officer if they're first due, or else their single firefighter is just in there all by their lonesome, trying to hump hose, trying to make a push, trying to get water on the fire. It's just not realistic, right? And so you have a company officer who's trying to hump hose, who's trying to search off the line, but they're also trying to listen to their radio for who their next in engine is, so they can dole out an assignment. And then when they do get an assignment, because like you said, it's this script of people that go through the program, they memorize the script. And then when they go to these, they do training, tabletop training, and they just memorize the script. And so they run down the script. And then when they go to a promotional board and they do their tabletops there, they just run down the script. And so you end up with these long-winded assignments of like, engine one, upon your arrival, spot your apparatus out of the way, send your manpower to the alpha side to pull a backup engine three-quarter line off of engine two, bring it to division two for primary search and fire control. Like, gee whiz, what did we think we were pulling a line for other than fire control? It's wordy. And the issue is that if we're going to find a victim, it's probably going to be in those first few minutes of a fire. Is that sometimes when we run fires or training, and a blue card heavy department is running command, half the time I'm trying to priority traffic with a victim, you know, call out a window, because also with the blue card model, we might not have ladders to those windows because there's not a truck company that's been able to take it upon themselves to accomplish those tasks. They have to be assigned them. God forbid they're sitting in level one staging somewhere. I'll get to that in a second. But half the time, you know, every time I try to get on the radio, priority traffic for a victim, busy tone, because someone is just, it's long-winded, man. And I think less is more on a fire ground with radio traffic. So I don't think it does clean up communication. That's one side of my soapbox. And then the other one is the tactics thing. And, you know, even if you use, I've heard all the time, well, we use PDA's communication, but we follow our own tactics model. Well, if you're leaving your everything but your first in engine in level one staging, I'm sorry, but you have a tactics model, right? Because that second due engine isn't hitting a plug and laying in without being instructed to do so explicitly. That first due truck isn't splitting crews and immediately going in and searching with a can, and guys are on the outside banging ladders against the building, headed to the roof to vent, or jumping in a window to VES because they've seen an action of opportunity to do so. When you hold a department's or a company's hand by making them sit in staging to receive an assignment, you are delaying that service to the homeowner and potentially the victim. So we don't run an EMS call and all stand there with our hands in our pocket on a CPR and wait for the paramedic to be like, okay, so you're going to intubate, you're going to put the Lucas on them. We do like the pit crew CPR. We train on it. We have a playbook for a medical call. Why should it be any different for a fire? And so to say that it's not a tactics model, I think is naive. Honestly, that's my own take on it, but it is, because it is a tactics model. If you are not allowing companies to arrive quickly and get to work, they know their job. Most fires are pretty similar. It's like every fire is different thing to me is nonsense. Like most residential fires and single family homes are, they share commonalities that we can plan for in a playbook, in a predetermined arrival model. We shouldn't need to stage and wait for someone to assign us a job. And then God forbid you are going from the order of assignments from the actual blue card program, which I understand those assignments have to be standardized just to standardize the class, but agencies, they adopt that all the time. And so when the first due truck shows up to a one story residential house with a kitchen fire and they're sent for a roof report, like, come on, there's probably other things that they can be doing that are going to help the incident and the people potentially trapped inside than getting a roof report. But I don't know. Like I said, I'm just a backwards fireman. That's just been my observation, having worked in both of those sort of systems. Let the first two, the first three companies, first two engines in the first truck, let them get there, give them a PDA kind of model. And then after that, once there's a battalion chief on scene and they can transfer command, now they can start doling out assignments as appropriate. I'm not saying we need to choke the street up with rigs, but also if your streets are getting so choked up with the first three rigs, I don't think that's a good excuse to stage people either, because that's just a training discipline issue that your crews don't know how to position on a fire. So, I don't know. I might not be popular for that opinion. Again, that opinion doesn't reflect the opinion of my agency. But I think we do a pretty good job right now, sort of bridging the gap. We have, like I said, we have our playbooks. I generally know what I'm going to do as the first new truck on a fire. And we have our audibles to flip through. And if we play an away game with one of our neighbors that utilize blue card, then we do blue card, because that's how their city operates, and that's fine. We listen to other places' fires. That's, if you're into the job, you tend to do that. And I listened to a fire not that long ago. I won't say where, but I listened to a fire in a strip mall. It was like, let's call it a Chinese restaurant. Kitchen's going in a strip mall, very blue card driven department. And I timed it. And Danny, it was like 15 minutes before the first truck got an assignment to open up the freaking Charlie side door. That's unacceptable. They had crews inside fighting fire before a truck was ever even assigned to go to the Charlie side, get that back door opened up. Like, no one walked through the Bravo and Delta, or at least it was never communicated. And I have an idea of what they were doing, because in a blue card model, everything is assigned. So unless they called an audible and didn't call down the radio, no one got in the Bravo or Delta exposure and got up into the drop ceiling to see if, fire had extended out of the MFO. Like, that's truck work. And for that to go 15 minutes unassigned, and then finally they're breaking into that Charlie side door while we have guys committed to the, not we, but while the fire service is guys and gals committed to the inside of that thing. That's the failure of blue card in my book. I don't know. That's just my take. But again, I'm just a backwards riding firefighter, so maybe for good reason. Maybe my opinions are silly. I don't know.
Well, all right. So I wanted to make sure not to interrupt you. I actually
No, you're
want
good. I'm sorry. I
no,
told you I could
no.
talk to a wall.
I want to make sure that I do that for all the guests. So I will start by saying this. Like you just said, it's your opinion, it's my opinion. All this is a discussion. It is not like, at least for me and you, we are not like these social media pages that completely shit on blue card. So I'll say that to preference. Yes, what I'm about to say, it does not reflect my organization. I'm not that much of a dumbass, because I know if there's people in my department that listen to what I have to say, granted, they might not listen to every single interview, but the way I'm going to title this one, I'm sure they're going to listen to this one. And so I say this to say it's a discussion between me and you, okay? The discussion is, I ask a question, you give your rebuttal, I listen, I digest it, and I give my rebuttal back. I will say, I have to agree with you on pretty much a lot of what you said. Me, my personal feelings, and not saying my department has to do it, because my chief can doesn't have like he doesn't have to do anything I tell him to do. I'm a fucking nobody. Okay. So this solely falls on the way the chief of the organization wants to run the department. But for me, I like PDAs, because what that does is everybody knows their assignment. Like, I feel like how to find the balance. Okay, maybe we take the blue card lingo, all right, the terminology, the communication model, and then we also enforce it with PDAs. Why? Whereas first in engine, fire attack. First, do truck. Of course, search truck work. If the truck's not going to be second in, then maybe next in engine, where we do that whole, we got to be a good at what, on both sides of the coin, maybe the first or the second do engine then completes a search while the truck is arriving. Then the truck can come and complete a secondary and do truck work, OV outside, whatever the case may be. Like, for me, when you can flood the scene with apparatus, and the men and women on the trucks or getting off the trucks have an assignment, they know what to do. the quicker that you solve the problem, i.e. the fire, the safer the fire ground is for everybody.
Absolutely.
So that's my whole thing about it. What I don't understand is I think there's a fee associated with blue card. I'm not 100% sure because
There is.
and I know some people might be like, well, how has he been on a department for so long? Which I can't remember how long we've been using blue card. So, and I say that because that's not my priority when we get there. Like I've heard size ups, but as soon as my driver hits the parking brake, I'm out. Like my headset comes off, I'm running, I'm going to do my assignment. So I don't hear that back end of what command does and like this is blam, 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 you know, the key points of blue card. But it's just my opinion is if we can flood the scene tactfully where everybody has an assignment, the faster the fire goes out, the problem solved. You know what I mean? That's just the way I look at it. But I don't understand the fee thing because to me, if we're doing something that's good for the community and the citizens, I mean, I get to a certain degree that I believe it's Brunicini's family
Correct.
or Brunicini Senior came up with it. Like, what's with the? It's an expensive thing, and it's like. To me, that can kind of hurt departments that may not be able to afford that, but that's beyond me. That's beyond my scope. But I love the conversation that we're having as far as it, because like I said, social media shits on blue card. And what's funny, what I find funny, sometimes I think to myself, some of the people on social media that will jump on and be like, yeah, and dig in, your department might use blue card. They might be hiding under an alias on social media and they're like, yeah, fuck blue card, but your department does it. So it's like, who's really winning this? Like, if you want to be an officer, like for me, if I want to be an officer, I have to go through the whole blue card thing. And, you know, there are a couple things that I would like to see change, like primary search and fire control. Those two can't happen together. It's just not going to work. It's
Not
one or the
realistic.
other. Somebody's got to put the fire out, and somebody's got to do the search. So that's but my thing is too, there are some people out there that can do blue card and do it well, but also know, hey, these are my tactics. Like this is what I'm gonna do, this is how I'm gonna say it, instead of waiting on, all right, the follow-up report or the level one staging. To me, that's delaying, like you said, that's delaying the service to the citizen. And
Absolutely.
that's just my opinion. I am not shitting on blue card because my department uses it. There are a couple things that I like, but I wish we could tweak some things about it. But one of the questions which I've never really been able to find out, I might need to do some digging, is I think it was once Brunicini left, Phoenix did away with using it, correct?
That's what I've been told, but I wouldn't be the one to answer
Right,
that, you know.
right.
What it sounds like is the their operations probably evolved with their agency and their city's needs. And I real quick, and I think this is important too, in sitting here, you know, talking to you and kind of thinking. One thing I want to stress, because I know I that and that's what your agency uses, get good at it, right? Because at the end of the day, you know, okay, sure. Maybe a 36-inch three-piece pinned halogen isn't the best halogen on the market, but if that's what's on your rig, you better be good at
That's
using
what you
it,
got.
right?
You're
And
right.
so the same thing goes to command and communication structure. And there's jam up firefighters at all of the departments that surround us, and some pretty solid company level and battalion level leadership. It's just not. In my own experience and observation, I just think there's a lot of room for improvement in the blue card model as a whole.
Yes. Yes, and me listening to you, I totally get that, and I'm pretty sure most of the people that listen to this will understand that too. No, we're not. I'm definitely not shitting on my organization because
No, of course.
that's what they decided to use, and that's fine. But I like to have discussions because of I mirror it this way. All right, if I only learn what my department teaches me, in my mind, hey, I'm a pretty good fireman. But it's not until you get outside of your own four walls and listen to and watch how other things are done, you're like, huh. So I like to have discussions with individuals, not to spark debate. We're not trying to shame any department out there, because like you said, there are some jam up departments. I know, I'm going to throw this department out. It's on the West Coast. I'm pretty sure they use the blue card model.
It's pretty
Shoot.
big out west, so.
What his name? Something Castros, Anthony Castros. If I'm sure
Not
somebody,
familiar.
if I'm wrong, somebody email me at the student of the game Gmail email address and let me know. But like, I listen to the West Coast and they do it flawlessly and they fight fire. So I understand your whole notion. No, we're not taking a dookie on blue card. I just like to have honest conversation and discussion because to me, this is what's wrong with society now. Like, two people can't just talk about, well, I don't really like this. Well, why? And then you give your input and I listen and I'm like, hey, I agree with you without it being a complete, hey, did you hear what Matt said? Matt said, if we use blue card, we suck. That's not what you said. There's just different ways and things that you would like to see improve. And I would also like to see improve as well.
Course. I respect that.
Yeah, because like I said, that's how we met. And going down the list, man, of looking at the comments, it's just like, oh my God, it can't get worse. And then you read the next comic, and it's like, it can't get worse than that.
That's anything on social
And
media
it's just
nowadays, brother.
like, dude, like,
Yeah,
come
no.
on, let's have open discussion. Like, there's nothing wrong with a good old, not debate, but this gets everybody's wheels thinking. Maybe my chief or my training chief will listen to your viewpoints and be like, I kind of like that. And then maybe, that's how to me progression works, because we can go back and go, hey, chief, got a question. We do this, but have you thought about maybe if we modify to do this way? Maybe he'll go, huh, I haven't thought about it that way. Maybe he'll go, nope, it is the way it is. And that's fine. That's his 100% right to do that. But without having that open dialogue, that discussion, we're not really helping the fire service at all, going back and forth, because, like, let's just say, if me and you have two different political views, well, if you don't view my view, then we're not fucking friends. Like, fuck you. Like, come on. Let's be adults. So,
No, 100%.
yeah, go ahead. Go ahead.
No, I was just gonna say, I think humans are inherently a little tribal, and so we tend to find our group. And then anyone who's not a part of our group is an outsider, and we just decide that we don't like them. And so it takes a level of maturity to be able to bridge that gap and have conversations that are hard and uncomfortable, and that's where growth comes from. So
Absolutely. Absolutely, man. With that being said, with your history and your upbringing into the fire service, what would you say? To me, it sounds like you've had some quote unquote mentors that have kind of guided you and showed you, like, hey, this is how we need to view the job. This is how we need to act and correspond to the job. How important is that for others listening to find that mentor?
Oh, dude, it's everything. It's everything, man. And Eric, on his interview, and I don't want to misquote him, but he said something that I've always really fundamentally believed in. And that is meant like this job is, you can't teach every aspect of this job in a 6 month fire academy. It's impossible. And so really a fire academy is to like give them the foundation, but then from there on out, it's up to us to mentor the next generation of firefighters, because we can't, if we fail to mentor them, then we have no control over the direction of the fire service. And we set them up for failure. And we don't want to do that, right? We want to lift our next generation up and give them, maybe even more than we were given. But I was really fortunate that I had amazing mentorship at pretty much every step along the way. I've never really worked in a system where it was like, sit down and shut up. I know for a lot of people, that's the unfortunate reality. What do you know? Shut up. I've always been mentored. Hey, do you know how to do this? No, let me show you. Right. And that's made me who I am in the fire service. And actually, it's made me who I am as an adult and as a new father, and it's done everything for me. So I think it's everything in the fire service, man. It's super important. And it's not even just fire ground stuff. And this is what Eric was saying. He was talking about, he'd never mopped the floor before the fire service. Man, I'm the same way. I never ran a chainsaw before. I think the first time I ran a chainsaw was on a roof prop when I was taking firefighter one, you know? And I hear it occasionally, not so much at where I work because I think we have a really healthy culture where I'm at. But you do hear people, especially online, complain about, oh, well, the senior guy just wants to laugh at the new kids because they don't know how to run power tools or they don't know how to, fix stuff around the firehouse. And it's like, cool, so teach them. What better opportunity do you have to teach a young adult life skills than in the career fire service? Hey, here's how to cook a meal. Hey, here's how to make your bed. Because maybe they didn't have that opportunity growing up. So not only can we mentor them on the job, but we can mentor them in life. That's a huge honor and responsibility. So I like to think I mentor people. I want to be a good mentor. I strive to be a good mentor. I'll let my mentees weigh in on if I did a good job or not. But I've seen them go out and grow tremendously. I had a probie. He was a lateral. So he had already come with a fair bit of experience, and he came to do his truck time. We put our probies on an engine for a little while, then on the trucks for a little while. Kind of rove them around the city so they get to work at all the stations. He came and did his truck time, and dude, I think we went to like six fires with him. Man, it was great. We went to two fires his first tour there. One of them was a commercial fire, and so he wouldn't normally be the roof guy. Typically, that's Chris, my driver, and I. But as there was already two engines there, so we were all out as the truck. It was like a boarded up commercial, and so I looked at my boss and I was like, "Hey, Luke, can I bring him to the roof with me? This is a great opportunity for him to vent a commercial roof." And he was just like all smiles, and meanwhile, I'm like, "God, please don't get this kid killed," But the point is like he was, he came to us as a probie, and I like to think that we mentored him, and now he's going off and teaching an academy. And so that's how we pay it forward, so now he has an opportunity to mentor. Just as I was eager to mentor people because I was inspired by the people that mentored me, hopefully now he can inspire our next generation of firefighters. And that's so cool, man. So yeah, it's important. I mean, yeah, if you want to, I don't know how, if you had specific questions about mentoring or kind of how
No,
you want to dive into that or
I just wanted to hear like why it's important, because I think it's like it's paramount. Like you, unfortunately, there are going to be some people that come into organizations where the senior person, man or woman or whatever, the person that's been on the longest, however you want to coin that phrase, sometimes they'll go to that individual, be like, hey, can you show me how to do this? And they'll be like, no. Or what's more important for the new people coming in is you need to learn how to cook and clean. And to me,
Yeah,
there's
no.
a time and
Yeah.
place for that. I'd rather have someone that can actually, that is good at the fire ground tactics and basics, and then we can teach them, hey, oh, you don't know how to cook? Okay, I get it. Maybe your
Yeah.
parents cooked for you, or your girlfriend, your spouse, your significant other cooks. That's fine. Let's teach you. But for me coming in, if bullet point one, the first agenda on your thing is they got to know how to clean the toilets really well and mop and vacuum. Like,
Nah.
your priorities are way out of whack. Because how do you explain that to the citizens? Well, we hired a new person here. They botched the stretch, but they can make perfect stripes in the carpet with that Dyson vacuum we got them. Like, it
Right.
makes no sense.
No, 100%. I could not agree more. If I had it my way, when I get a probie, those first few sets, I want them working on their skills. We do a probie book, so that's nice because it kind of structures the skills. Now, like you said, there's a time and place because there is an opportunity for them to learn life skills, but it doesn't need to be day one.
Exactly.
So, like, what I'll do with them is when I do kind of, the way I've structured it in the past, especially it's a little different with laterals, but like with a brand new probie, like 21-year-old kid straight out of college or something like that, barely lived on their own. Right out the gate, it's training on job related stuff. So in the morning, we'll do the rig check together, and then I'll try to pull some stuff off the rig and like do something functional or practical with it. It's not just like, hey, these are the rescue jacks. It's like, hey, here's how we set up the rescue jacks. Here's how we lift with the rescue jacks. So now it's not just a piece of inventory. It's a tangible tool, right? And then from the rig checks, then we'll go in and be like, hey, I think Lou wants to sit down and talk with you. They're going to do their whole expectation thing. Then we'll go into the office. Let's get you logged into all your stuff. Here's how you check your email. Here's how you put in sick leave. Here's how you do this. You're, like, those are important too, because sometimes guys don't get shown that because we all just assume someone else taught them. But then from there on out, it's training. And now when I clean the bathrooms in the evening, I will like kind of bring them with me and be like, hey, like, this is how I like to do it. This is sort of like the expectation, but I'm not going to be like, Proby, get in there and clean the bathrooms, and definitely not Proby, get in there, cook the meals, because they have other stuff that they should be doing. As a matter of fact, when I'm cleaning the bath, I will happily double up on cleaning and cooking dinner if it means that I don't see them because they're out in the bay going through the rig or going through the bags in the truck or doing mask up drills or something like that. That's where they belong in that moment. And then right before we're about to lose them as a probie, when they're going to either get off probation or they're going to spread their wings and fly, and or they're going to go to a different station as a probie, then I'll do like, hey, just so you know, next set is your last set with us, so you're on the hook for your probie meal. And that's sort of a rite of passage in a way, because it tells them that we're comfortable enough in their skills that it's like, okay, now you can like cook a meal and sit there. You like, you know, you don't need to be in the bay for 12 hours a day. Come on in, you know, hang out with us for a little bit, cook the meal. But that comes after they've already had a chance to really dig into their job a little bit. Like I said, especially for new people, because your culture that you have as a fire service is sort of dictated by the way that you mentor people. And so if you can't set them up for success on the fire ground right out the gate, and you prioritize other ancillary tasks around the firehouse, then, you know, it makes, you just, you can't have a reasonable expectation that that's going to be a strong culture on the fire ground either.
I agree. Okay. Awesome. That's all I wanted to hear. So my last question for you, I always like to ask the guests, where would you like to see yourself? Do you ever foresee you riding up front at some point in your career, or is the back step where you want to be for right now?
I go back and forth almost daily. You know, if you asked me about 5 years ago, I'd have been like, I want to be up front. But I think it really helps that I really love my job right now. I have a cool spot on the tower. It's, you know, not an opportunity that everyone in the department is afforded necessarily. And so I'm really grateful for that. And I love the work that we get to do. I love the job I get to do, whether I'm riding in the iron seat or the OV seat. It's just, it's cool, man. It's fun. And especially our outside vent team is such an autonomous position. We sort of, you know, we have like a list of tasks that need to get completed, and it's up to us to prioritize the order that they get completed based on, you know, the data input that we're receiving from the fire ground. And so for me, that's really engaging and stimulating, because I'm constantly reading the building. I'm constantly reading smoke. I'm constantly sort of going through this checklist in my head of where's the fire at? Where are the guys inside at? Where's the victim going to come out of, and where's the mayday going to be at? Because my job is all 100% anticipation as the outside vent guy. Like if I have to react to something as outside vent, then I probably haven't set myself up for success in terms of anticipation. So I love that aspect of the job, and I would love to stay in that seat, because I have so much to learn about it too. I've been an engine guy most of my career. And so I have so much more to learn about it. So I'd love to say that I'll spend another 10 years in that seat, but also in a department of our size and the needs of our department, they've already cranked up the pressure to kind of start acting in one capacity or another. Our promotional track sort of, we have the option to go either direction. So we can either go the driving route, where you have to do the acting engineer program and then you can test for engineer, or you can do the acting officer program and test for lieutenant. You can do both if you want, but you have the opportunity to go either way. We have the need for actors right now. because we had a bunch of actors and they all just promoted. So I think this year I might start my acting officer book, and just kind of see where that takes me. But that doesn't necessarily mean that I'm looking to jump ship out of the back seat, because I mean, being a backwards riding firefighter is one of the coolest jobs in the world. And so, like I said, I go back and forth daily, because there are certainly some days where I'm like, man, I've been doing this for kind of a while. I feel like I know a thing or two. Not to say that I don't have a lot more to learn, but I think I'm looking for like that next thing to kind of sink my teeth into and motivate me and stimulate me. And I think maybe doing the acting officer thing and with the intention of one day taking a promotional test, would be a really cool experience. But I also know I have a lot of my own growing to do before I'm ready to be in that position. And I'm just now starting to feel, and I've been on the tower now. I came to the truck in 2022 or 2023. So I haven't been on the truck really that long. And so I'm just now starting to feel like I kind of got this job sort of figured out. Like when we go to a fire, instead of it just being chaos, I'm like, this is what I need to do. This is how I'm going to do it. And everything's going to be gravy. And I like that feeling of being in control. So yeah, I don't know. Maybe one day. I've always told myself I wouldn't promote until guys were like, hey man, when are you going to promote? But also I think there's something to be said about being a bit of a self-starter. So
No, and I love your answer behind it. I love your reasoning. To me, it all makes sense. To me, it's all on when the individual feels like, all right, like I'm ready. But then
for
two,
sure.
there are some days where you're like, nope. If you encounter or see or hear something that your officer's having to go through, you're like, nope, I'm
Oh, they
good.
have a hard job, man. There's definitely days where I'm like, boy, I'm not envious of him
Right,
or
right,
her, right?
right.
Yeah.
And then there are days where you're like, something happens and it's you always hear, well, you can affect that change. To me, it's a double-sided coin. Yes and no, because you can be a company officer and still not really able to affect change because, to me it's all on the leadership. Like if the
Oh, for
leadership
sure.
is set in their ways and they're like, I don't care what rank you are, this is the way we're going
Yeah.
to operate, then it's like, okay, granted, company officers can affect their inner circle, i.e., their crews and their firehouse, to go, hey, like, we're not going to worry about that outside noise. We're going to make sure we do our job. But, it's one of those things where I think it wholeheartedly, it's on the individual if they want to promote or not. But I always like to ask the guest that. So,
No, that's great. You nailed it with the leadership thing. And I think that's part of it too, is I've been fortunate by having really good leadership. So I think, you always hear these stories in the fire service of guys that they just promote because they're tired of working for their boss or whatever. And I've never really had to experience that, because I've always, if anything, I've had leadership that's inspired me to, either want to do my own job better or to try to do their job. Like it's been more of a motivational kind of mentorship, inspirational thing. But also I think some guys that have these really good, they feel like they have good ideas, but their leadership isn't listening. So they want to promote so they can influence. We are a very ground up fire department. So guys and gals on the truck floor have a lot of say in a lot of aspects of our day-to-day operations. We're a pretty committee driven fire department. And so, the people on the ladder committee or the hose committee or the saw committees, the people deciding what hose and nozzles we're going to have, they're mostly firefighters, and line level personnel. And when we have ideas for things and I go to my leadership about it, they're usually like, that's a really good idea. Write up a proposal. Or they're like, hey, let's talk about that because here's why. So I never really feel like we get shut down. And so I don't feel like I need to, promote so my voice is heard, because I think we're pretty heard for the most part. And that's cool, because not a lot, that was not necessarily the place where I used to work. And I'm not dunking on my last place, because that was an awesome place I loved working there. But that was like an old conservative southern city. And they were just like, the city didn't have a whole lot of money, and they were just like, look, this is just how I used to bring my own New York hook to work. because we only had fiberglass pike poles. You know what I mean? It was kind of like that. Whereas here, you know, on the flip side of it, I'm like, hey, I saw this new tool at a conference, and they're like, cool, let's buy one and demo it. You know?
Right.
So I don't really have much to complain about there. That's pretty cool that we get to say that.
Yeah. And like I said, you know, everyone has their different experiences. Every department has a different culture. Mm-hmm. I think what's starting to change is a lot of individuals are trying to get their fire department culture to be where it needs to be for their citizens. And I think our issue, our hump, our hiccup are the individuals that are set in their ways. It's always been this way. Why change it? Firemen hate change. And I think slowly but surely, you know, light's being brought to that. But I think the key point out of the whole thing is if we, meaning the personnel, if the boots on the ground can all come together and go, hey, we'd like to see this change uniformly and respectfully, our command staff should listen. They should listen because it's like, okay, well, it's not just one or two people. If you have an organization of like 150 personnel and all 150 agree, then maybe it's like, okay, well, there's something going on here.
Well, that's that servant leadership, right? If you're in a position of leadership, you should be there to support the mission of the people that are out there trying to accomplish it, which should be a citizens first approach. That's really the only way that, you know, So I agree completely. Now, well, you know, you can't let the inmates run the asylum either because, you know, at some point in time, a chief needs a chief, right? Like, I think we all acknowledge that as well. So it is, it's probably a delicate line to kind of straddle to be like, yeah, let's give them influence and say, because they are the ones swinging the tools and stretching the lines and doing the job. So they should probably have a say in some things, but we also, you know, they also have to be able to rein folks in every now and then and be like, well, okay, well, hold on. Like, I understand you want this, but we also have to put a new roof on this fire station and we have to buy, you know, this fire station has a new washer and dryer and you fools put a hockey puck through the bay window. So we need to fix that now. And so it's like, you know, you have to fix all those things too. And so we don't always see that from the line level. We're just like, well, gee whiz, why don't we have this latest and greatest? And so I'm not envious of the chief's job to be able to manage that. And I think it takes a special kind of individual to be like a firefighter's fire chief, to be there for the line, but also be able to effectively do their job as you know, an executive level leader. So
agree. All right. Matt, man, like I've loved this conversation. Like this was no back and forth. You hate me, I hate you. Like this was just open, honest conversation. Hopefully getting people to self-reflect on themselves. That's what the whole thing is like. And that's what I've learned through my years of being a human on this planet was, you know, when I was 20 something years old, man, you couldn't tell me anything. Like it was, what is this guy talking about? But as you get older and you start realizing things and it's like, okay, yeah, I could do this better, but it takes that inner self-reflection of like, okay, let's get better at this. And the only way to do this is through reps and sets and having open, honest conversations. So I just want to say thank you, man, for taking the time to do this.
Oh, dude, thanks for reaching out and having me on. I love doing this stuff and it keeps the fire lit and I get good perspective from your end and it's just, I love it. So if you make it out to the Mile High City, definitely let me know, man.
I will have to. My wife actually has a friend that lives somewhere it's near Denver. I know that. Mm-hmm. So if I'm out that way, for sure, man, I'll definitely hit you up and see if I can come ride for a little bit and stuff.
Hey, man, I'd love to set something up. You can definitely come for dinner, and I can't make a ride along promise because that's up to the chiefs.
Right.
But you're always welcome in our firehouses, regardless. So definitely hit me up, and would love to catch up again.
Awesome. All right, man. Like I said, I really appreciate this.
Heck yeah, man. Yeah, me as well.
All right.
Later.
If any of the listeners out there are or know of a great firefighter who embodies the principles of being a great communicator, goal-oriented, hardworking, humble, passionate, and professional, regardless of rank, career, or volunteer, contact me at studentofthegamefirepodcast@gmail.com. Until next time, stay focused, stay committed, and stay safe.